Hello, this is Ashley. Welcome to the Through Every Season podcast. Everyone is welcome here, and it's a safe space for you to explore your faith in God. We all go through different journeys in life. That includes highs, lows, and everything else in between. Grab a drink of the day, a snack, and take a seat. We'll help you walk through every season. Welcome, welcome, Michelle, to Through Every Season podcast. So excited for you to come on the podcast today.
I'm going to have you give a little bit of an introduction just to tell everybody listening who you are and what you do and what you're all about.
Sure. Well, my name is Michelle Steiner. I live in Pennsylvania with my husband, Ron, and our two cats, Jack and Sparrow. I work in a school as a paraeducator. And I get that I work with students who have disabilities and some who don't. And I'm also a writer, a speaker, and photographer. And I have a blog called Michelle's Mission, where I write about life with a learning disability and feature my photography. I am very passionate about advocating for people that have disabilities. As I said, I have a learning disability myself. And I also love photography and writing. And I just love being able to combine that all together.
You do so much. Oh my gosh, you have just so many talents, which is just so wonderful. And I didn't realize that you were in PA. I live in Ohio. We're kind of neighbors.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I live in outside of Columbus, Ohio. So
awesome. Central Ohio. Yeah, we live outside of Pittsburgh.
Okay. Yep. Pittsburgh gal. Yeah. Look at that. Uh-huh. Yes. Well, awesome. So on the podcast, we do a drink of the day. Do you have a drink of the day today? If you don't, that's okay.
I have a water for right now.
You know what? That's okay. And when I say drink of the day, it's not like we're hitting up the bar and like we have an alcoholic beverage. So if you're listening and that's what you were expecting, I'm sorry to disappoint you. But, hey, that's okay. I have a poppy combined with pomegranate juice. Have you had poppy before?
Yeah. No, I don't know if I've ever had poppy. That sounds really good.
They're like the probiotic like soda. So it's similar to like Olipop, if you've seen like Olipop. Like,
oh, okay. Let me try that. That sounds good. Yep.
They're super good. On the podcast, we have poppies a lot. So everybody's like probably rolling their eyes that will be listening going, oh, Ashley, another poppy. But I got a little bit fancy. I put a little bit of pomegranate juice in it because I like the health effects from pomegranate juice.
That sounds great. I love pomegranate. Yeah.
It's really good. So drink of the day today. We're staying hydrated, and that's what.
Yes, we are.
That's what matters. All right, so we're gonna dive in to the life of Michelle, which is why everybody is listening today. And if you're a listener to the podcast, you know I love to talk about people's childhoods. I love to just kind of go through the journey of life so then we can kind of see who you were as a child leading up to who you are now. So we're kind of going to go back to the beginning and we're going to talk about childhood Michelle. So you've already mentioned you have a blog called Michelle's Mission. Mm-hmm. And when reading over your website and reading over your blog, you discuss living your life with dyscalculia. And am I pronouncing it correctly?
That is one way. There's dyscalculia or dyscalculia, but yes.
Awesome. I was a little bit nervous after I saw it. I'm like, oh, I hope I say it right. But dyscalculia or dyscalculia. Gotcha. So before prepping for this podcast, I had never heard of dyscalculia. And I don't know if I mentioned this to you previously, but I have done work previously in the DD or the developmental delay community in college, some with adults, and then for a few years with children, like zero to three. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little bit familiar with like the DD or the developmental delay community, but yes, I have never heard of dyscalculia. So I was so excited for you to come on and talk about this, because I'm sure if I haven't heard of dyscalculia, the other people who are listening, this is going to be their first time kind of hearing about this condition as well. So could you explain from somebody who is living with this condition what dyscalculia is?
Dyscalculia is, I have a really hard time being able to understand math and how numbers work. I don't get along with numbers very well. I don't read numbers backwards, because a lot of people, when they hear, oh, it's a math learning disability, you must read numbers backwards. And no, I don't read numbers backwards. What is hard for me is just figuring out how they work. I am unable to read the face of a clock. And we tried a lot whenever I was younger to be able to do that. I can't do that. I do not know all my addition, subtraction, multiplication facts. We've tried memorizing them. And if you would give me a random one, I couldn't do it, most likely. I have a difficulty if I'm doing a math problem, I get lost in the steps. I can't tell you how to do something. And people will say, well, why don't you just use a calculator? And that is good for certain things, but it really was not effective, especially when I was in college, and because you could put the numbers in, but if you don't understand how to do the math, it's really not going to help you out. So that was really hard. I also mistake my right for my left. And it's hard if I'm going to put my shoes on. I don't know. I can't look at my shoe and say, okay, this goes on the right foot or the left foot. It's also hard, whatever directional concepts, east, south, and west. Reading a ruler is really difficult for me, and where to put things on the line. And at work, everybody knows, or they soon will find out, do not ask me to help you with math. I cannot do that. I work with sixth graders this year, and I mean, I cannot help them, and that's okay. I've gotten to that point where I'm very comfortable with saying that. And it's just numbers and me don't really get along. And when I was a lot younger and I was diagnosed, we didn't give specific names for learning disabilities. Of course, everybody knew about dyslexia, but nobody knew about dyscalculia. But the person who evaluated me knew I was not going to be a math genius when I was 5 or 6. We knew that wasn't going to happen.
And it's funny that you bring up dyslexia, because I know when I had Googled, I saw dyscalculia just on your blog. And I was like, let me just do a simple like Google search, just because I had never heard of it. And it said that it was commonly mistaken or associated with dyslexia. Have you gotten that a lot in your life, that people just assume that you have dyslexia, or they think it's the same thing?
Yes, exactly. I've gotten that an awful lot. I've had people that if I explain, I was at the assistant's office years ago, and I put on my form that I had a learning disability, and all of a sudden the caseworker's reading it to me. I said, why are you reading this to me? And she said, well, you said you have a learning disability, so I just assumed you couldn't read. Now, occasionally I might get a word here or there wrong, or I do struggle with reading comprehension, but it's not really anything compared to what the math is. So I get a lot of people will say that, or they'll say, oh, do you put your numbers backwards? No, that's really not the key. That's not something I can struggle with. I also have coworkers, sometimes they'll say, oh, can you read a test to these students? I'm like, yes, I can read a test to them. But sometimes they don't understand that why I can't help them out with their math. And that can be really difficult, because I think sometimes people have in their head what a learning disability looks like. And I don't always fit into what they think. And then I'll run into people that'll say, well, you don't look like you have a disability. And then I have to explain to them that you can't see every disability. Especially people that I know will say, well, you must have been cured or have overcame your disability because you have a bachelor's degree or you have a job. And I have to tell people that, well, I may have graduated from college. I have a 4-year degree. I have a job, but I still have the disability. And I've just learned a lot of ways to be able to help myself. And it's really not the disability that gives me a lot of trouble. It's a lot of times the barriers that society likes to create.
100%. And you know, a disability, whether it's a learning disability, a physical disability, whatever type of disability or delay, it doesn't have a look, because everybody looks different, whether you have a disability or a challenge at all, which is crazy. And I just think that people who either they haven't experienced or they don't have a lot of experience being around people who have any sort of disability, I feel like they just sadly, they don't know. They just know what they see on TV, or maybe they saw somebody once who had a very obvious like physical limitation.
Yeah, right.
They think everybody looks like that, sadly. So you had mentioned that you were diagnosed when you were 5 or 6, which would be around kindergarten. I remember that that from your blog too. What led to that diagnosis in school? What was kind of the lead up to that?
My kindergarten teacher saw that I was struggling. I also struggled when I was in preschool, but I was my parents' first child, so they didn't have a whole lot to base development on. So they sent me to school thinking, okay, she'll catch up. And sure enough, I did it. It was really difficult for me. I can remember I couldn't tie my shoes when I was very young. I struggled with counting. I also really struggled with dot-to-dot pages. I remember my teacher would give them to me and I would complete them. And I thought, oh, I did a really good job. And when I got them back, that wasn't true. And I was just very frustrated. And I also struggled socially. And part of that was I was an only child for 13 years. So I spent a lot of time around adults. But another part of it was pretty clear that I did have a disability, and I soon got labeled the dumb kid, or people didn't think I was that smart. So that really was another struggle. But the main focus was academics when I got tested. And sure enough, after school psychologist did a battery of tests, I have a learning disability. And it was hard going throughout the school system. I had to repeat kindergarten in a different school. And that is also when a lot of the other bullying began, because it was a very small school district that if you were one of them, you fit in perfectly. And from the very young age, I stuck out. Everybody could see that I went to learning support. I to get my test read to me, or to get extra time, or to have class for what I needed it. And I couldn't hide. I couldn't blend in. Everybody knew that. So that was part of definitely the struggle. But the biggest thing, the hurdle, was always math. That is something that it was pretty clear from the day one that this was going to be something that was going to be a challenge for me.
Oh, wow. And I love how you kind of brought up how you were tested too, and kind of the diagnostic process leading up to your diagnosis. And oh my gosh, it probably looks so much different now, just because the landscape for children who have a developmental delay or a learning disability in school, oh my gosh, it's so much different from when I was in school. And I love how you also brought up kind of how it affected you socially, because kids like labels, and they do label, whether it's negative or positive, and it can be really hurtful. In terms of like the accommodations that you had at school from your teachers, what did that look like?
And it was specialty instruction in all areas to be able to learn. And as I went throughout school, they figured out I could read really well. So I was in regular ed reading for some time. And then I also was in science and social studies as well. And I had supports in those classes that were regular ed, with having the test read aloud to me and extended test time. Those were some of the really key things. They also put me in front of the classroom a lot too. And a big part of that was my ears were clogged for a great number of my childhood. So I had trouble hearing things, and they wanted me to be able to focus, pay attention. And I also received speech therapy when I was very young. But by the time I was in sixth grade, then we discontinued that because I was fine with speech. So those were some of the services. And by the time I was in high school, I was in all regular ed classes except for math and a resource room.
Oh, wow. Now that's a great kind of description of what everything looked like for you throughout school. I love that you brought up the having your ears, having like recurrent like ear infections or ear clogging, and that you also had speech therapy. When I worked with kiddos, I would see that all of the time. That so, and back then they didn't really do like the ear tubes like they do now. It's kind of crazy. I had so many kids that had to get tubes in their ears.
We did those too.
It would lead to speech delays, or after they got their tubes, they were able to kind of take off with their speech. So it's crazy just like how things have changed, like in the DD space, in the early intervention part of it. And then with your learning disability, did it affect like any relationships, like relationships with your family or relationships with other loved ones?
I think in the beginning, it was definitely a journey for my parents with accepting that too. They were always my biggest advocates, but I think my dad, it was hard for him in the very beginning, because when they told her, well, your daughter is never going to really understand math. He goes, well, 1 + 1 = 2. And they said, she's just not going to be able to understand that. And some other family members, they thought my parents, if I didn't get a good grade, that I should be punished or just certain things, or they didn't understand. They thought, well, if she really wanted to learn, she could, or you have to just work with her. And my parents did work with me. They expected me to try my best. They would study with me, but they didn't expect perfect grades. They really just expected me to go in, but I had to put forth the work and the effort. So I think sometimes that was hard with family too. And it just took time for them to be able to understand that this was hard, and just that I was really doing my best.
I feel like dads often have a hard time with things like a diagnosis. I don't know if it's just because women naturally are such nurturers. So when it comes to being accommodating, that's kind of almost like a natural instinct for us. But men, like as nature, are such fixers. So if they're like, well, I can't fix this. What do I do with this? And I feel like that can be really difficult for fathers to cope with that.
Exactly, because that can be hard. But my dad really came through and was so supportive through so many things. He was the first one that found out that I could write really well. He saw a story about a dinosaur that I wrote, and he said, this is pretty good. And before the light bulb went off, because before that, I didn't think I had anything I was good at. I thought that I was just doomed to fail at everything, and everything was a struggle. And that encouraged me to write more. And he read a lot of stories to me whenever I was really young, and that cultivated that love for reading and that love for writing. And sometimes he would also explain things to me. He would do some science I remember an ice cube with it evaporating, and showed all the different things with that. So, and we just had a lot of great conversations growing up. So yes, I can understand in the beginning it was hard, but then he got to see, okay, math isn't her thing. That's okay. There's some other things that she can do.
That's so good. And I love how you learned how to cope and how to learn in your own way. And it was like your parents learned beside you or alongside you. And I think that that's just so great. You have great parents, great parents.
I do. I've been very blessed.
So many kids need that. They need parents like that. So very, very blessed. I know you talked about facing some social challenges in school because of your learning disability and with some bullying, which is always awful. But did you face any other hardships throughout your childhood due to your diagnosis with dyscalculia?
I think a lot of what I faced was I wasn't able to drive because of my disability. And but that wasn't that big of a factor for me because when in high school I was being picked on a lot more, I started looking at some outside resources. I found a faith-based program that had a writing group that I joined whenever I was a teenager, and that really helped me to find acceptance. And then whenever I outgrew that group, I found an adult writing group, and they got to see me grow as a writer and as a person. And people will say, well, was it a big deal not driving in school? And I'm thinking, well, not really, because my friends who were older took me wherever I needed to go, or my friends, and they were already out of high school. And a lot of the difficulty with my peers, the people that were my age, were saying, oh, when are you going to start driving? Or are you driving yet? And but I wasn't hanging out with them as much. I was hanging out with some other people. So I think sometimes the not driving was a big thing too, that could be difficult for people to understand. But we knew my visual perception and my eye-hand coordination were going to be some issues. So my parents, we waited a year before I got my license, or we waited before we attempted, excuse me, to get my license. And after that, what they did was they said, okay, why don't you go out and mow the field? We lived in the country in this and had this huge field. And I went on the riding lawnmower, and instead of making perfect straight lines, I made circles, which I now say I know where crop circles come from. And also they had me try to go up our driveway. And thankfully my mom was in the car with me because I almost crashed into the family garage. And at that point, we knew that this was going to be something that we wanted to get some professionals to look at just to see where our options were going to be at. And I passed every other test that they gave me. I had good eyesight. I knew what to do if the car broke down or if I had a flat tire. But when they gave me the visual perception part, they said, I'm sorry, we can't have you get your license. And my mom prayed about that before that happened. And I just felt like 100 pounds was lifted off me because I was worried about hurting myself or hurting another person because I knew that my visual perception could go out, or just I could fall over a lot easy. And there's a lot of things that a lot of those factors. So whenever I found that out, it relieved a lot of things for me.
And I bet that's something that people haven't thought about either, is how it can affect driving. Even though, of course, your learning disability is mainly associated with math, all it can affect all these other areas of your life, like simply just driving. Wow.
Yeah, like right and left. Once we figured that out, that was one thing. And just coordinating everything together, that was a big part of that. And there are people with learning disabilities that can drive. There's people with intellectual disabilities that can do that too, and autism. And it's such a wide range for people of how it impacts somebody.
Very true. That is so true. And your blog has discussed how dyscalculia has affected other areas of your life outside of school, like from your confidence to your day-to-day living, like being able to drive or not, and even your love life. So how has dyscalculia affected your life outside of school and learning?
I think one of the hardest things was people not understanding that I have a disability. I can remember there was people that said right out that I don't want to date you because you have a disability, and that's okay too. I mean, it hurt, but those weren't the right people for me. And I can remember I was breaking up with my ex, who I did go to high school with, and he told me, I really think that you can drive if you wanted to, and I'm tired of taking you places. And I don't think he understood a lot that whenever I went through a period where I was really negative. I mean, it was a time where it was really hard for me, and I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to find a job that I wanted to do with my disability and going through college. And he would always be like, well, you're going to have to work. And I'm like, well, I want to work. I'm just a little bit fearful about some of those things and just trying to find the right job. So that was definitely something. And God did bless me with the wonderful guy that is accepting of having that He's able to take me where I need to go. And I have a wonderful coworker that takes me home at the end of the day for work. And we live in a central location where I can walk. So that has definitely been one area that has been affected is relationships. I've also, whenever I went to college, that was another thing with having a stigma. A lot of people didn't think I could go to college. Some people said, well, you're not going to be able to get your degree, or why don't you go to trade school? And then once I got there, I had a psychiatrist who told me, you're probably not going to go beyond community college. And professors that told me I was going to have limited job choices, which added to my fears of the future. And that was hard. A lot of that stigma that goes around with that too. And I also struggled at jobs. Sometimes I would go to a job and they said, oh yeah, we're disability friendly with accommodations and access. And it turned out that it was anything but that. And learning how to advocate for myself was really difficult too. But it was up to me to be the person that went in and did the accommodations and spoke up for myself. I had to speak up and say that I have a disability. These are the services I'm going to need. And I've gotten a lot better about being able to do that. So sometimes that can be a factor too. Some of the other struggles with having the math disability also is if I'm out in public and I'm at the store, it's always a surprise to me when I go to the register how much I'm spending, which I'm sure it is for everybody nowadays, but for me, it really is. But if you give me $20, I can see the quarters and the dollars. But if you give me a credit card or a debit card, it can be really hard. Giving a tip, that can also be difficult too. So have to use my phone. And I also found out through one of my evaluations that I also have limited hand dexterity. And the light bulb just went off after that diagnosis in my 20s because, my 30s, because things would fall out of my hands. I don't have good handwriting. And we just thought, oh, that's just all part of the learning disability. Well, it turns out I have limited hand dexterity in both of my hands. So it can be hard to open up doors for me and my fine motor skills as well.
Wow. And that was diagnosed in your 30s too?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. I bet when you receive that diagnosis, like just what you said, like light bulb, like, wow, like things make so much more sense now in my life.
Exactly. Because people just thought I was clumsy. People are klutzy, and that wasn't necessarily the truth. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to be the athlete, but there's a reason behind that. Mm-hmm. And that was actually one of my first articles that got published was my struggle to open up locks with limited hand dexterity. We just moved into our home and I could not unlock the door.
Mm-hmm.
And the mighty had a prompt, what's a seemingly easy task for other people, but it's really hard for you with a disability. And that's what started the writing.
Oh, wow. And I think it's incredible too with your writing skills and your communication skills. Like you are such like a fantastic speaker. And I don't say that as like a comparison between like somebody that has a learning disability and somebody who doesn't. I just feel like just as a person, you really express yourself so well, which is like when you said that your school counselor in college said, well, I don't really think that you're going to get, you know, past community college and your jobs are going to be so limited. There are so many people that have amazing math skills and they have terrible writing
Yep.
and communication skills. And what you need in most jobs are writing and communication skills. So
exactly.
That alone, like, oh my gosh, look at how many jobs just based off of those two skills that you could have, not even, you know, including math. And you have those skills, which are excellent.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I thank you. Because I know a lot of people that are great with math and great with numbers, but the communication's really hard for them. And sometimes just getting their ideas out. I knew a very intelligent person that I think has autism, and it took him a long time to find a job that definitely was something that he didn't go to school for. And it was just going through the job interviews and learning how to communicate and to be able to talk. I mean, those are the things that matter more.
And if you don't mind sharing, of course, has dyscalculia and that diagnosis, has that led to other conditions like anxiety or depression or anything else? Just because oftentimes learning disabilities or other types of disabilities also kind of have those comorbidities. Have you experienced any of that in your personal life?
I have not experienced a lot of anxiety and necessarily depression. I was really negative when I was a lot younger before I got my bachelor's, because I was hearing all these voices of people saying, you can't do this, or you're not working hard enough, or you just have to get your act together. And that was really hard to hear. And I just thought, well, I must not be a complete person because I'm not good at math, or I can't get this together, or I'm trying really hard. And I feel like I'm a failure at a lot of that. And for me, a lot of things changed once I got that degree, or I figured out things that work for me. I knew when I went to university after I moved back in with my parents that I was going to have to find the right program. If it was going to be a lot of math and science, that just wasn't the right program for me. Despite people who told me that if I got my act together and went to become I could become a certified teacher. But I had to learn that, okay, someone can have that opinion, but that's just not the right choice. And I had to learn I had to use accommodations. And there was always going to be people that thought they were cheating or giving me an unfair advantage. But I had to learn not to listen to them and to do what I needed to do. And another thing that I found was when I focus on the things I can do, I'm so much more empowered and happy than when I sit around and think, oh, I can't do math or I can't drive. And with the not driving too, I'm able to notice details that other people will miss. I'll be in the car with my husband and I'll say, did you see that? And usually he's like, oh, I'm focused on the road. Now he pays a little more attention, but I get that chance to take a picture on one of my walks. And if I did not, if I was in the car driving, I would miss so many things and I couldn't take that picture. And it's just focusing on the good, focusing on the positive more than I focus on the negative.
That's so important, just because it's so easy to have that negative self-talk. Mm-hmm. And if you allow it to, and I'm sure so many people can relate to this, that negative self-talk can replay on repeat like a CD all day, all day. And it can affect your life. And I think it's great how you've kind of learned how to talk over that negative self-talk.
Yep.
And talk about, well, you know, other people have said that I can't do A, B, and C, but look at all that I can do, or look what accommodations I can make. So I can do the thing that they're saying that I can't do. And I think that that's just really great obstacle to overcome. And gosh, yeah, negative self-talk, that's hard. It's something so hard to go through.
Definitely. And it was just learning how to be able to talk to myself in a way that was reality, but also putting a positive spin on things.
I love that. And I know you mentioned that you're happily married.
Yes.
And in previous relationships, you had partners that just weren't accommodating to your needs, or they didn't love you the way that you deserve to be loved. With your husband, how does he help you with your day-to-day living and kind of living with dyscalculia?
A lot of times, he's great about giving me the ride to work. That is wonderful that he can help me. He's also great, like if we're out, sometimes he'll take care of, taking the tip and that sort of thing. He's great for that. Supportive with definitely if I talk to him, he's great for helping out with that too, or just like listening and being there. He was the first person that asked me how having a learning disability made me feel. He also is wonderful about us living in a central location where I can be independent and to have that too. So I'm not always dependent on him to take me places or to do things, and I can be independent with myself too. He's also great with the finances and trying to figure that out because I am terrible with with money. I know there's women who are great with that, and that's wonderful.
Aw, and how long have you guys been married?
We will be married for 9 years next month.
Oh,
Yep, in June.
that's amazing. And you know what? Listen up here, ladies. You know, she's describing somebody who is tending to her needs and being a biblical husband. And listen here, if he's not willing to help you with the things that challenge you, you just need to get rid of him, you know?
Exactly. And he came as a as an answer to a prayer because there were so many broken relationships, and I was just so tired of having all of that that I just finally prayed and I said, God, I'm giving this to you. Don't send me anybody until it's the right person. And
Oh.
he was so faithful to do that. And I wasn't even thinking about it whenever I met him. And that's just, yeah, it's amazing how that works.
You have insinuated that you are somebody who has a faith or you are a Christian.
Yes.
How has your faith intertwined with your life and your learning disability?
I used to think, how could this ever turn out for any good? Because there was a point in my life, especially when I was very young and discouraged, I thought, my life is always going to be hard. My life is always going to be difficult. I did grow up in a faith background, and I just wondered, how could God use this? And little did I know, he was not only going to use my disability to be able to help myself, but also to help a lot of other people. And I can just remember I was at a baptism and they were talking about God's purpose for everybody's life and that everything's planned. And I thought, well, where's my purpose at? When am I going to meet somebody? When am I going to be able to have the job or to be able to go back to school? And I just thought, okay, if I didn't have this disability, my life would be perfect. And God has just used this to be able to help other people out. I get that opportunity when I am at my job as a teacher's aide to really relate to my students. I know what a lot of them are feeling. Some of them, it's like hearing a recording of myself. I hate having my learning disability. I wish I didn't have an IEP. And sometimes that confusion that comes in. I had a student today that's like, well, I'm stuck in this program because I have these test scores that I'm really low. I'm ahead of the kids that are in this program and in this class, but with the regular ed kids, I'm really behind. And I know what that felt like whenever I was talking with her today. And I get that opportunity. And I get to tell them that having a disability isn't a bad thing and I can help them. And it's not to say that I couldn't be helpful with them if I didn't have one, but it's that empathy. I understand that because that's where I've been at, and I can just see God's hand in that. I can see it sometimes whenever I do my writing or through my blog. A lot of times people will say that, oh, that's my story, or I've experienced that. And thank you for showing this because I thought I was the only person. And it gives me that ability to be able to understand others.
That's so incredible. And having that gift of empathy is also really incredible. Just being able to really help and connect with other people and lead other people too and guide other people. It's such a great gift from God to have. So I love how you touched on that. And it's also the perfect segue because you know you talked about your experience being a paraeducator and that's what we're going to talk about next. So in college, or actually we're gonna back it up even a little bit. In
Okay.
school, did you want to go into the teaching profession when you were a child, or when did you kind of get led to this path?
path towards high school. I knew that I wanted to work with kids in some capacity. I wanted to be a preschool teacher. And I just knew, but I also knew being a certified teacher wasn't going to be the best thing because I knew that going through the classes would be hard and I'm a terrible test taker. But I knew that I wanted to work with kids in some capacity. And that was around high school that we figured that out.
And how does living with your disability affect you supporting children with disabilities and different challenges in school?
At times it can be a challenge too, because especially when I worked in child cares, when the kids would take their shoes off and I couldn't tell the right foot from the left foot, I can remember some of my bosses didn't understand that. And they said, whenever I was leaving, oh, that's something that you can work on. And they didn't understand that I couldn't tell the difference between the right and the left foot. Sometimes with just the fine motor skills. I remember we were doing a craft and they couldn't understand why I couldn't put a hole in the top of this ornament. And they were saying, well, you need to be more interactive with that. And I was trying to be interactive, but I was really struggling with the craft too. And sometimes understanding that. Sometimes it can be a challenge if I have a fun with students and they want me to help them with their math and I can't do that. And luckily by now, I'm so confident and I made peace with all this. So if a student asks me, I can just say, nope, I'm sorry, I can't help you with that. And I'm okay with that. I have that peace because I know that's just not what I'm good at. It's okay. There's other things I can help them out with. And but sometimes that can be a challenge too, because they don't understand. I work with middle school age students and they have their locker combinations and sometimes they want me to help them. And I have to explain to the kids, I'm sorry, I can't help you. And I also sometimes have to explain to staff, no, I'm not going to be able to help them with that. Oh, but you can learn along with the kids. At one point, I remember telling a friend, well, we're either going to see a miracle or else I'm not going to be able to do it. And sure enough, it came to not being able to do it.
Oh gosh. Something that I do love is you being able to share with a student that, like, hey, that's not something that I can help you with. That's teaching a boundary though. And definitely middle schoolers, and well, really everybody, but definitely middle schoolers, they need to know boundaries and they need to learn boundaries. So even in that, like, that's a teaching moment.
Yes, it really is a teaching moment where I get to just show them that everybody has something they can't do. There's just things people aren't that great at, and that's okay. I can also remember that I was in a class where it was frustrating because they had some math in that and I couldn't help them. And I just looked up to the sky and I said, all right, God, why am I here? Why, you know, I can't do this. And somebody said, the student's crying. And I got a chance to go on eye level with him and he was frustrated with the work. And I said, well, I want, you know, I have a math disability. I know how hard it is, but I don't, I can't help you with it, but if you need help, I want you to tell me and I'll get you the right resources. And before I knew it, he stopped crying and he was raising his hand. Now he is asking for help when he needs it. And he's such a hard worker. And it's just amazing to take somebody from that point of being frustrated to somebody who's empowered to ask for help.
That's so good. And to teach that skill to kids to say, you know, tell me when you need help. Ask when you need help. Because if you don't have that skill in life, it's going to be such a struggle and just in so many areas of your life. It's just something so valuable to learn when you're young. From your point of view as being a paraeducator and also being somebody that has a learning disability, do you feel that we need more paraeducators and more teachers with learning disabilities in the schools?
Need that, or at least an understanding of what learning disabilities are and other disabilities, because I think students need that representation that they get to see an adult that has a disability and that understands, whether that's from having that personal experience themselves or having the understanding and the knowledge of what they are, because students need to know that A, they're not alone, and there's other people that have disabilities. And I think they also need to let go of a lot of the shame that it's not the disability necessarily that causes a lot of problems. It's a lot of the barriers that, that society will want to create. And it's learning how to be able to advocate and to hopefully create a society that does not have those barriers.
I love that answer. It just reminds me when you were talking, when I worked in early intervention, we would help from transition from the early intervention program into preschool. If they wanted to go to preschool or the parents wanted them to go to preschool when they were three. And if you had a child that maybe at the time they entered early intervention, they were diagnosed with a developmental delay, but maybe they ended up having like typical scores by the time that they were three, they still had an option. Well, do you want to get evaluated by the school district for an IEP? Or, you know, there's also opportunities to be peers in those blended classrooms. And there were some parents that said, well, I don't want to have my child with other special needs child because I don't want them to act like that. They're just going to learn how to act like the people with special needs. And it was always kind of a challenging conversation to have with parents to explain, no, really, it's beneficial for students with developmental delays and for the peers. Like, it is a beneficial experience for both and an excellent experience.
Yes, it provides so many benefits. And I think sometimes we look at them as people with developmental disabilities and think, oh, they're the ones that are the behavior is. But really, school-wide behavior is really for every student. We really have to understand that's something everybody has to learn. And I think everybody also needs to learn how we can all get along in a society as well.
And how, from your point of view, of course, how has the special education in the classroom changed from when you were a child to now?
It has changed a lot. For students with learning disabilities, they're no longer in a special classroom at a certain point, like for math or for reading. They're in a lot of the regular ed classes in basic, and that has some benefits where they get some definitely that interaction and that placement, and they get, but it can also be really difficult if we have a student who cannot read or cannot do math very well, of where exactly how to meet a lot of their needs. Because I can only imagine that if I was in a regular ed math class whenever I was at that age, it wouldn't, we tried it once, it didn't work out, even at the very basic level. So I can see that. But there's also some benefits as well with that too, that they get that that interaction too. And we still do have students, some things are the same. We do have some self-contained classrooms for students that have autism, and they are brought out with paraprofessionals. There is a lot more paraeducators than whenever I was in school too. I can remember I had one in the learning support classrooms. There was like one paraprofessional for that learning support room. And even I think when I was up at the high school level, we had one paraprofessional that was in the learning support classrooms. So maybe we had like two, and then there might have been one in the one of the other rooms. They might have like three paras. That was about it. Now we have a lot more that go in to some of them are in self-contained classrooms. Some of them are one-on-ones for students who need that, so they can go into gen ed. We have itinerant ones that go into regular ed and learning support that I do, which I love. And there's just such a wide variety now of people that can help, and a lot of positions to do that, because the teacher cannot do a lot of this on their own. They do need to have the support in the room.
I agree. It is so, so different. And I like how they're, like what you said, there's just a lot more accommodations, and there's just a lot more support in the classroom. In grade school, from my memory, just in my grade, my elementary school, we only had one person that had had a disability, and then they had the special classroom, and they were sometimes with us and sometimes not. But I feel that if it were today, we would have had more of the students who really had a hard time learning and in the classroom that could have also had special support that wasn't available to them then.
Right, exactly. Yep.
100%. So you engage in a lot of advocacy work in your blog and then your speaking, which I love because I love advocacy work. But what kind of led you to want to go down this path to advocate for others?
I think what is when I finally stopped wanting to hide having a disability, that is what encouraged me to be able to want to help other people, especially once I was able to get my bachelor's degree. I went and studied community programming for Americans with Disabilities, and that is the service end of special education. And once I had the degree and I went through the course and I loved the staff and the department, I was ready to go out and to be able to help other people.
I love that. I love when, people just are led to advocate for others and to do advocacy work and like anti-stigma work. I think it's so important. So it's wonderful that God has led you down that path to really, truly help others. And I really hope that when people listen to this podcast, maybe there's some parents out there who are really scared what the future for their child may look like. Maybe they've been told by a doctor that, oh, your child's never going to reach the mentality past a 12-year-old or whatever it may be, that I just hope that when they listen to this, that they just get a lot of hope. And also they feel the confidence to advocate for their child.
Exactly, because my parents advocated for me and that made all the difference.
And we kind of talked about this, or you kind of touched on this earlier, but there's always this question within religion or Christianity that mostly non-Christians ask as almost like a rebuttal. But why do you feel that God places certain challenges and certain disabilities on people if he is a good God?
I think God does that. It's God's choice whether he decides that he wants to heal or he doesn't. But if he decides he does not want to heal, as he did in my case, there's a reason that's behind that. And there's a beautiful story and it's a good one. And it's just finding that reason why and that purpose to bring glory throughout that. And there's just so many people that I went through that why question a lot. And that's part of a grieving process that I think people need to do when they have a disability, is grieving that loss and asking and being bold enough to ask that question to God, because I think God wants us to come to us with that question. And the why is going to look different for everybody, but he has a plan. He has a way that he can take that brokenness that was meant to harm you and to turn that into something so beautiful. And I think it's just going before him and saying, why? And how can we use this, Lord? I give this to you. How can I bring glory to you? And God has shown me so many ways that I've been able to do that.
What is your best piece of advice that you would give to those living with a disability?
One of the first things I would tell them to do is focus on the things that you can do, because it's so much more empowering. The things that you're good at, the things that you love to do, they'll bring you so much more joy. And I would tell people not to give up, and that success doesn't always come in the package that you expect. Sometimes it comes in something so much better.
And of course, you have your blog, Michelle's Mission, and your photography, and your writing, and your speaking. And I know you also have the link to some other podcasts that you've done. Do you have anything else coming out in the works, or any other projects?
Yes, I do. I will be speaking at a transition convention in July in State College, PA. I'm also working on expanding with becoming a trainer with disability equality education. So that'll be a new thing coming up in a little while. And I'm just trying to speak and just be able to write and just be able to share my story to encourage others.
I love that. And I'll make sure also in the description of the podcast and then on social media, I'll have a link to your website for Michelle's mission. And other than your website, is there another place where people can follow you?
You can find me on Facebook and Instagram as well.
Make sure to link those. I will link those in the description and then also in the social media posts. But Michelle, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on. I feel like I could talk to you for hours. Like, I just enjoyed sitting down and talking with you so much.
Having me on the show, it's been a pleasure speaking with you as well, Ashley.
And thank you for everything that you do and all the advocacy work. And just thank you for representing others in such a positive light. Well, everyone, thank you for tuning in to the podcast. And as always, you are welcome to explore your faith here. Jesus will always welcome you home, and so will I. Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to the Through Every Season podcast. You can find new episodes on Spotify and Apple Podcasts on the second and fourth Friday each month. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook using the links in the podcast description. Do you want to come and tell your story or testimony? Fill out the drop form listed in the podcast description. We'll see you next time.